Radio, 9 Stowe Street in Waterbury. Let the games begin.
For the latest weather forecast at your fingertips, call the WDEV weather phone at 1-800-585-1211 or locally at 244-1172. The WDEV weather phone is brought to you by PowerShift Online Services. PowerShift, better, cheaper, faster, and best of all, local. Log on to gopowershift.com or call toll-free 1-877-949-7767. PowerShift Online and the weather phone from WDEV. Welcome back to Equal Time. I'm Carl Ettner, and what we're doing all hour today is talking about the future of food and farming in Vermont from a couple different perspectives. We just heard from Amy Schulenberger, the director of Rural Vermont, and their focus is on economic justice for family farmers. And right now we're going to be talking with Dave Rogers, the policy director for NOFA Vermont. And if you want to join the conversation about food and farming in Vermont, our number is 244-1777 right here in the Waterbury area. Otherwise, toll free 877-291-8255. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, Carl. Good to be here.
Good. I don't know if you heard Scott's call towards the end of the last half of the show. But
yeah, I did.
How would you characterize the people who come to the NOFA conference?
Very diverse. I don't know. I mean, it's a very large conference, larger than a lot of people realize. You know, if you talk to people, as I did all day, and go to the different workshops, you realize that there are everyone from consumers to people working in the schools to gardeners to commercial growers, everyone from Vermont and states nearby as well. So,
we
would have to do is go through the program for the conference and look at the workshops that were offered, and you'd see that there was something for everyone, and it certainly didn't have much to do with trust funders.
Mm. What I get the impression of is that pretty much everybody going to the conference has dirt underneath their fingernails.
That's true. I think so. If they don't have dirt under their fingernails, they want dirt under their fingernails. I would point out, in terms of working with real farmers and our work with real farmers, and as you suggest, those are really the people we serve. At the conference, unbeknownst to most people who attended, there were advanced technical tracks for farmers taking place in other locations. On Saturday, we had an advanced technical track all day, series of workshops for organic dairy farmers and livestock farmers. And we brought in people from all over to present advanced workshops that would help them do a better job of farming and producing and be more successful. And then yesterday there was a whole track of workshops for commercial vegetable and fruit producers, and workshops on how to deal with pest and disease problems and food safety issues that are in the news, and how small growers deal with those, and winter growing. And today Elliot Coleman is doing a workshop, an intensive workshop for about 120 commercial vegetable producers on advanced techniques. So, we're a diverse organization of consumers and gardeners and farmers, and we do workshops and work closely with real farmers throughout the year.
Mm. And what are some of the main policy issues that that NOFA would like to see its members emphasizing at the State House hearing tomorrow evening?
Well, the same kind of things Amy talked about. I mean, I think to present the vision, I think what's happening in Vermont here is very, very special. I think you sensed it at the NOFA conference, and people talk about it a lot, where we're sort of poised to put together a local food system here with markets for producers. And, I think the vision of a commercial of a community food system and consumers and producers working together and the excitement around that. I think there are some regulations and such and laws that can be put in place that would support that, and we'll be talking about that. We have several of our producers, member producers, and a board member of an organic dairy farmer who will be talking about what her vision is and what her hopes are for the organic dairy industry. But I think, as Amy said, it's an opportunity for people to come and just share their hopes and vision and to tell the legislature, you know, that we'd like to keep moving in that direction to clear away whatever it is that might be inhibiting that. Mm-hmm. Amy talked about raw milk and meat. We support that totally and work with rural Vermont on that and appreciate their leadership on those issues.
We didn't get a chance in the first half hour of the show to talk much about raw milk. Do you want to tell us what the issues are and what NOFA's position is?
Well, you know, in a broad view, the food systems, there are different food systems. There are large-scale food systems with wide distribution networks, and then there are local food systems, and the risks associated with those two systems are different. The ordinances around raw milk, around milk, are put in place to deal with an industrial food system and large-scale production and marketing of milk and the problems that surround that. But with local production of raw milk done in with attention to safety, there's no reason to have onerous regulations around that, and the research doesn't support that either. I have a background in microbiology, and when I looked into this in preparation for my testimony last year on this bill, once you start digging into the scientific literature on it, it's quite clear that that small-scale production of raw milk and direct marketing of raw milk doesn't present any extraordinary risks.
And the reason that you talk about the difference between large-scale and small-scale production is that with the large-scale production, you're shipping the milk farmer farther. It's it has to keep longer before it reaches the consumer and is consumed, and so pasteurization is important for that.
That's certainly part of it. If you're going to have a large-scale, widespread distribution of raw milk, you could run into those problems. The other problem is on larger farms with animals intensively confined and fed very high-energy diets, they develop microorganisms in their guts that can contaminate milk, and these are more pathogenic than you would find on animals grazing on pasture and in smaller herds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of two systems that we have to be thinking about here, with two different sets of risks, and to try to impose those risks associated with an industrial system onto this small scale system is unreasonable, and in this case it inhibits the development of sales of raw milk products and lots of opportunities for farmers.
And raw milk sales have come out of the back alley a little bit since last year, but not completely. You want to explain what the legislature did last year?
Well, they enabled farmers to sell more raw milk than they were previously able to do. It went up to 50 quarts a day. Amy's Rural Vermont bill that they developed on raw milk is been introduced again this year, and the hope is that there'll be wider opportunities for farmers to market milk, and with some interesting procedures put in place to ensure that the milk is handled properly. So we'll see where that goes, but I think we're able to impress upon legislators last year that they do need to be thinking sort of one size does not fit all on this, as in all aspects of the economy, and they need to understand the reality of smaller scale production and the set of risks that might be associated with that versus industrial system. The same is true with an issue we're working on, which has to do with cut leafy greens, fresh produce. You know, the spinach outbreak in California led to all sorts of initiatives at the national level and at various state levels to impose really draconian practices on growers to prevent the contamination with pathogenic E. coli. Those risks don't prevail and exist on smaller scale production systems, particularly as we have here in the Northeast. I'm talking about CSAs and farmers markets, pick your own operations. But there's a real risk that, you know, if we don't move forward in educating regulators and lawmakers about those different risks associated with those different systems, that we'll have some pretty very unfortunate regulations coming down from Washington or state capitals. And so we're working regionally with other NOFAs and MOFCA as well, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardening Association, to come up with some trainings and even a research project to demonstrate that we're really talking about two levels, two different kinds of risks, two different production systems, and we have to have regulations that are sensitive to that.
So just help me be clear here. In response to the E. coli outbreak in spinach from California a few years back,
yep.
Did there come new regulations into effect that you think would hurt small farmers?
In California, they developed a California Leafy Greens Marketing Agreement, which imposes that on larger growers. And what's happening is the wholesalers, people who are buying from larger growers and even smaller growers here in Vermont, are starting, and the supermarkets and retailers are starting to require certain practices be in place on the farm. And these buyers have to understand as well that, you know, there are different risks. They should not be imposing USDA protocols on smaller growers, because the risks are not the same.
Mm-hmm. So this Leafy Greens marketing agreement from California, this is it's not formally in effect on Vermont farmers, but
no,
some people are trying to sell it to or are asking them to adhere to it. Is that what you're saying?
Not particularly that California Leafy Greens agreement,
okay.
but a similar form of practices that would be required. They're basically trying to cover their butts. In terms of litigation.
And what are things that the big growers are being asked to do that you don't think are appropriate for small growers to be asked to do?
Well, in California, they're really going crazy. They're requiring a ripping away of buffer zones and vegetation on the perimeter of fields because they're afraid wildlife will come in.
Buffer zones, you mean hedgerows?
Yes, hedgerows, buffers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, completely making barren the area around the fields and reducing the biodiversity around the field.
Mm.
I mean, and there's really, you know, the thinking with the spinach outbreak was that came from wild pigs that had on their feet or wherever pathogenic E. coli from neighboring large-scale livestock farms. We really don't know where that organism came from, but there's been a huge overreaction, ripping out a requirement that livestock should not be within 2 miles of an operation. This is a USDA protocol that exists. So you can imagine what that, for smaller and diversified farms, you can imagine in Vermont, you wouldn't have any commercial vegetable production if it was required that there would be no livestock within 2 miles of the operation.
Might be at the Intervale in Burlington. That's about it.
Maybe. But that's the, so, you know, we do a lot of work at that level as well, including at the national level with the organic program. But that's our, you know, we're an organic farming association, so we have to pay attention at that level as well.
We're talking with Dave Rogers, the policy director for the Vermont chapter of NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association. If you'd like to join us talking about the future of farming and food in Vermont, the local number in Waterbury is 244-1777. That goes as far as Montpelier and some other places as well. But if you're outside that zone, 877-291-8255. 855 is a toll-free number. And Dave, just before we went on break, we heard from a couple people I interviewed at NOFA, and one of the policy suggestions from a person who was concerned about the access to land for people who want to get into farming was, he was pointing out there's all this land in Vermont that's tied up in second or third homes, and he was suggesting tax the owners of second and third homes more heavily and use some of that money to help people get access to land for farming. What are your thoughts on that?
About that specific proposal, well, you know, it sounds good. I think it'd be difficult politically. It's not one that I have heard before. But it certainly is a huge constraint, the price of land in Vermont and the inability of smaller farmers to be able to, and new farmers to be able to afford it. And, you know, we recognize, as does rural Vermont, as do the Agency of Agriculture and everyone, that we need to pull together the resources and the ideas and the money to be able to put in place some sort of program that will help fund those folks. At this point, there's really no good program or answer that I'm aware of. There is some money in the federal farm bill that for beginning farmers that may be helpful as that program gets up and running, but how that'll trickle down into the state, I'm not sure. So I don't have a good answer for you there, Carl. It's a continuing constraint.
Is NOFA doing any workshops on helping farmers find land to lease for almost nothing? I know that there are people who graze on neighbors' land and maybe even get paid for it. I'm not sure how that model works in Vermont, but in other states, people keep down the brush on other people's land by grazing on it, so you don't have to own a lot of land to get started.
Right. Well, those things does happen by virtue of, you know, people, farmers getting to know their neighbors and the like. But we don't have any specific programs on that at the moment. But we are at the beginning of conversations with those other entities I mentioned before in trying to address that. So I don't have there's nothing there right now.
Okay. Want to play something, a couple more conversations that I had yesterday with people at the NOFA conference, and get your response to this, Dave Rogers.
I'm Heidi Wilson, and I live in Craftsbury. I teach organic gardening at Sterling College. And if I was to see policy change, I would like to see policies that support on-farm and custom slaughter facilities, and that also support other kind of processing facilities and local distribution networks. Supporting inspections that require facilities and techniques that are possible to afford at a small scale, and that really allow people to process and sell meat from their own farm.
Ishana Artra, Brattleboro, Vermont. I didn't even know a food garden existed until a couple of years ago. I'm very encouraged by what I see today, and I believe that the economy will force people to learn to grow their own food more locally. So I don't think we have a choice. It's going to change. If we don't make sure that more people can eat food locally, then in effect we're condoning starvation if we're cut off from the larger producers, and it's made an economic issue.
Okay, Dave Rogers, your comment on that.
Well, I certainly agree with those comments. We certainly support the greater availability of on-farm produced meats and products, livestock products. We support the bill that's was passed last year, and we're hoping farmers are going to be able to raise and sell meat directly from their farms. Again, the microbiology there doesn't support regulations, onerous regulations, to prevent that. So that just needs to be understood. Unfortunately, we're sort of caught in this trap of the state and USDA certified slaughterhouses. So I'm not sure how that'll all play out here in the near term, but we certainly we one of our priorities is more infrastructure and slaughterhouses and meat processing facilities locally and at community levels.
Mm. I just want to point out once more that the theme of the whole conference this year was Grow It Here, increasing food production
yes.
locally, and you know, the farmers we have are primarily on small plots of land, growing
yes.
small amounts of food, but still supporting their community very, very much and creating jobs here.
Did you see the headline in the Times Argus this morning?
I didn't.
State sees trend to smaller farmers, smaller farms,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, so the inertia is in the right direction here. There are something like 400 more farms in Vermont this year than there were in 2002. Now, this is 2002 to 2007. So in 2002, 6,600 farms. In 2007, 7,000 farms. And fewer larger scale farms and quite a significant increase in small farms, including farms of 1 to 9 acres. These would be market gardeners, market gardeners and farmers. So, people are finding places to farm, and these are folks who are marketing locally. So, I think that those statistics are really impressive and give a lot of hope.
We're talking to Dave Rogers, Policy Director at the Vermont Chapter of NOFA, and we're going to go to Brookfield, where Charlie's on the phone. Hello, Charlie.
How are you?
Good, thanks. What's up?
One of the things that was discussed, and I was at both days, and there were several people who discussed the fact that it's something to think about. These large farms they want to sell out can be divided up into smaller farms.
Hmm.
All you have to get is a group of people together that want to buy the farm, and you can divide it up. The land's there. You can do anything with buildings.
Have you seen that happen, that larger farms have gone not to houses but to smaller farms?
Yeah, because some of these places that are for sale, you know, like right now I'm in Addison County, and there's farms for sale over here. They're not a housing development type places. They're farms. They've got farm land. But these guys either can't farm or they've got too far in debt or whatever, and a group of people could buy these farms up and divide them up into smaller farms to do whatever. If they wanted to raise beef, even if they wanted a dairy. Right now I wouldn't jump into it too fast, but
sort of a cooperative purchase approach?
It's been discussed several times in the last few years, and there was a man that who died recently that was talked a lot about it and even had some things going. And this weekend, there was a number of people that discussed this with me. So,
Dave Rogers, what's your take on that?
Pardon?
What's your take on that?
My take on that is it sounds like a great idea. I'm not aware of those of that having happened. I think to the extent that you could help with legal arrangements and networking of people to put together cooperative buying agreements like that of land, I think that that'd be great. And I think working with local banks as well. I think our executive director Enid Wonnicott works closely with local banks on various projects, and I think the banks as well locally sort of see this energy and see these opportunities and see the markets. And we work a lot with commercial farmers, both vegetable and dairy and livestock growers, with the farm viability program, where we go to farms and sit around the kitchen table with farmers and help them crunch the numbers and develop business plans and enterprise plans. So if they want to try build a new structure and see how that's going to work, try new markets, try new products to grow, we help them crunch the numbers on that. And so that's a program that's funded through the Vermont Housing Conservation Board, and NOFA is one of the service providers there. So we get out onto farms and help people figure out how they'll be able to be successful at whatever it is they're doing.
Time for a quick phone call from Tunbridge. Henry, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Just two thoughts on land ownership. I did a lot with New Zealand farmers, and they have a government program where the first property that a young person buys, their first mortgage, they heavily subsidize that on a governmental level, give them very low interest loan. So that's something that possibly might be able to be worked out somehow. And the other thing is that my parents had property in New Jersey, and the land use taxes are written there so that it's really to someone's dramatically to someone's benefit to have someone on their land farming it, and that builds an incentive for the property owner too.
Okay, thanks for those thanks for those ideas, Henry. Just about out of time, but 30 seconds, Dave.
Well, there used to be a program which is sort of quiescent at the moment that tried to connect young farmers with retiring farmers or farmers who wanted to work an agreement where the young farmer would develop an equity interest. There was a land link program, and it was run through the Center for Sustainable Agriculture.
And it no longer exists, so what do we do?
Well, this is what I was alluding to before. I mean, there are a lot of conversations going on at the moment to pick up those pieces and put them together with other players and other opportunities to put together a program that would...
Going to keep working on it. Okay. Dave Rogers, Policy Director for NOFA Vermont, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
Okay, goodbye. Well, thanks for tuning in to Equal Time today. Travin's in tomorrow. Anthony Polina will be back on Wednesday and Thursday, and I'll be back here next Monday. Don't forget to check equaltimeradio.com for podcasts of the shows that Travin and I host, and maybe we'll get Anthony posting his there, too. I'm at vtcommons.org with my blog, and thanks to Artie Levine for engineering this show. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Stay tuned for Jack Donovan and music until 5 o'clock. The opinions on Equal Time do not reflect the opinions of Radio Vermont Group or its management. You're listening to 96.1 WDV FM Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, and AM 550 Waterbury Montpelier. Time for the news.
AP Radio News. I'm Sandy Kozel. Victims of the plane crash in Clarence, New York are remembered at a community memorial service.